Welcome to Diplopod. I'm joined today in the studio by Kareem Sajjanpour to talk about the recent Twitter war between President Trump and various Iranian officials. So let's start there. What is this all about, Kareem?
So what happened was a few days ago, President Rouhani, Hassan Rouhani of Iran, gave a speech in which he said to the United States, peace with Iran would be the mother of all peace, but war with Iran would be the mother of all wars. So he kind of urged caution in Washington. And I think he obliquely, implicitly implied that Iran may be able to close the Strait of Hormuz, which is this very strategic passageway in which in any given day, a third, a quarter of the world's oil resources pass through. And so Trump kind of out of the blue a few days later, in all caps, taunted Rouhani over Twitter. And he said that, I don't remember the exact wording, you can find it, but he basically said...
threatened a version of war. That was how it was
exactly,
read.
Exactly, that if this would be... if you ever threaten again, it will... the worst fate will befall you. And so a couple of days later, Iran's foreign minister, Javad Zarif, replied to Trump and, you know, kind of taunted him back, urged caution.
Color me unimpressed was Color the me end. Unimpressed end of his tweet.
Word. Yeah. And I think that, you know, one of the big distinctions between the Persian language and the English language is there's no such thing as all caps in Persian. So you're typing in Persian, it's tough to convey a shouting sound like you can in English with all caps, as Trump did vis-a-vis Rouhani.
Yeah, so now we're sitting here in the United States and we're wondering, what is the strategy behind this? Is this trying to distract from Russia? There's a lot of domestic politics at play here. Is Trump trying to prompt action in Iran? What is your thought on that?
You know, I find it difficult to ascribe too much strategic forethinking to President Trump because his behavior often comes across as much more impulsive than it is strategic. That said, there is a template here which he could arguably be following, which is the template with North Korea, in which he consistently had taunted Kim Jong-un over several months, calling him Rocket Man. And many people around the world were concerned about war between North Korea and the United States, which in some ways helped precipitate the summit which took place between North Korea and Iran, between Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump in Singapore, in which Trump actually ended up praising Kim Jong-un and calling him a great leader. And so if you're looking at the glass half full, you think there's actually a method to this madness, and there is a strategy which is to escalate against Iran, threaten Iran, and the hopes of leading to some type of a diplomatic breakthrough. Now, what's interesting is that Trump had actually, according to Iranian officials, made numerous overtures to President Rouhani last fall when Rouhani visited the United Nations. Iran said that Trump had tried 8 times and was rebuffed to see Rouhani. So I think the bottom line about Trump is he's not dogmatic. He's not ideological. I call him a Marxist, but a Groucho Marxist. Groucho Marx said, these are my principles, and if you don't like them, I have others. Mm-hmm. That's kind of Donald Trump in some ways. I think what's important to note, though, is that his advisors, in particular his national security advisor, John Bolton, have incredibly hawkish views toward Iran. And there's a huge difference between the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, who's 30 years old, is thinking about how he can rule his country for the next 34 years, and Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, who's 79 years old and has been defiant for the last 4 decades against America and doesn't want to change the status quo. So it may be that Trump has this hope of a diplomatic breakthrough or a summit between himself and Rouhani, but Iran is a very different country than North Korea.
And so is your view, just reading between the lines, this probably won't work? This threatening rhetoric is probably not going to work with the Iranian officials that he's trying to reach, or maybe trying to reach?
So I have kind of 4 potential outcomes that I see within the realm of possibility as a result of Trump's Iran policy. Number one is essentially status quo, that Iran stays in the JCPOA. The United States obviously is pulled out of the JCPOA, But there's no conflict. Things don't really fall apart, although they sometimes appear like they might. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of muddle through. And the time frame I'm thinking about is from the duration of, from now until the end of Trump's presidency. From now until the end of his first term, mm-hmm. let's say. So number one is status quo. Number two is actually renegotiation along the lines of what happened with North Korea. And others have said this, and I tend to agree that Trump's biggest problem with the JCPOA is not the substance of the deal, because it's clear in his criticisms of the deal, he's never actually read the agreement. He never has any detailed criticism. His biggest criticism was that this was a deal signed by President Obama. So I think he would be amenable to a renegotiation of the nuclear deal, perhaps even under less favorable terms to the United States if it has his name on it. But again, I think the biggest obstacle to renegotiation is not Trump, it's Ayatollah Khamenei. But that's, potential outcome mm-hmm. number two, renegotiation. Potential outcome number three is something major within Iran, either the implosion of the Islamic Republic or a Revolutionary Guard coup. And I say this because Iran is experiencing a convergence of crises. They have a mm-hmm. currency crisis, social crises, women taking to the streets, removing their headscarves, mm-hmm. Environmental crises, geopolitical crises, spending billions of dollars to try to keep their regional allies like Bashar Assad in power. So it may be that at some point, the Iranian regime internally has some type of a breakup. The Revolutionary Guards are empowered to grab power more, or the system just cannot hold. The collapse of the Iranian regime has been predicted from the moment of the 1979 mm-hmm. revolution. So I would argue this regime is probably more durable than people think. But we also thought that about many Arab regimes right before the Arab Spring. So outcome number three is implosion. Outcome number four is conflict. Mm-hmm. And what's unique about Iran is that it's simultaneously fighting proxy wars with three different countries, with not only the United States, but also Israel and Saudi Arabia. And all of those could potentially turn hot. I think the biggest danger at the moment is between Iran and Israel in Syria, because mm-hmm. Iran is basically using their presence in Syria as a launching ground against Israel. And at some point, Israel may feel that it has to give Iran a serious bloody nose to deter them. But in the coming, it's not going to be in the next 6 months, but say 6 to 12 months, if Iran resumes its nuclear activities, that also could take us back to status quo ante, where we were in the Obama years when there was fear of either an Israeli or U.S. military strike against Iran.
So I know you don't like to make predictions, but it seems like the status quo is difficult to see that surviving for too long. Where do you think this could go from here in the next 6 months to a year, even longer?
Yeah, I have an easier time shooting down all of the outcomes that I come up rather than picking one. They're not necessarily mutually exclusive, in that we could, potentially have, we in some ways do have conflict now between Iran and Israel, but it could certainly escalate. I agree. I think the status quo is probably not tenable. I have a difficult time seeing Iran renegotiate with Trump, but I also feel like it's always difficult to predict the collapse of authoritarian regimes. But I think that what's happening in Iran is that the regime is willing to use overwhelming force to stay in power, and Iranians are not willing to die en masse to take power. So the status quo within Iran is likely to hold. So in some ways, I kind of feel like we're going to muddle through the next two, three years. There's going to be moments of real panic, international panic, when people think like there's going to be a war between the U.S. and Iran. But in some ways, you could liken it to our policy vis-a-vis North Korea, and that even though Trump and Kim Jong-un have met, there's no real conclusion. There's no, doesn't appear like there are substantive negotiations that are leading towards an endpoint. So it may well be that you have a renewed dialogue between the Trump administration and Iran, but I have a difficult time believing it's going to lead anywhere positive.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, before I let you go, I want to talk a little bit about politics in Iran. While ours is certainly in turmoil and we have lots of elections, as anyone who followed this closely knows, there wasn't really an opening until Rouhani was elected with the United States. How does the United States pulling out of the JCPOA or reimposing sanctions, does that impact the political future of the perceived moderates? Or what does it look like in Iran, in their political system, if with these factors?
It's a good question, because essentially President Rouhani had bet all of his chips on the nuclear deal and had stuck his neck out and said, you know, we need to come to terms with the United States. And the Supreme Leader was always cynical of that approach. And in some ways, the leader now feels that he's been vindicated. See, we can't trust the United States. We certainly can't trust President Trump. So Rouhani was already a weak. The position of president is a very weak job in Iran, and he's only been further weakened. And whenever you introduce the threat of war and insecurity in a country, that almost always benefits the security forces within that country. Mm-hmm. And so that certainly has happened within Iran. The Revolutionary Guards were already the most powerful institution in Iran, but they've become that much more powerful. The big focus in Iran, in some ways, it's kind of similar to the United States. Everyone is thinking about, you know, the president, President Trump, and his future, his re-election in the coming years. In Iran, everyone is thinking about the leader, Ayatollah Khamenei. He's 79 years old. People are talking now kind of more openly about succession. What happens after he's gone? Will there be a new leader? Will the Revolutionary Guards simply, you know, make an overt power grab? There is this vibrant young society, which I always say they want to be South Korea, not North Korea. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that they're not willing to use violence to take power. And they're up against a regime which is willing to inflict a lot of violence in order to keep power. So my sense is that internally in Iran, there's going to be a lot of frustration. There's going to be moments when we feel like the country is taking a step forward, but then it will take two steps backwards. In some ways, it will parallel what we've seen in the latter decades of the Soviet Union and then post-Soviet Russia, I would argue.
Well, there's certainly a lot to watch. We'll look forward to reading your piece in The Atlantic coming out soon. And thank you for joining us, Karim, in the Diplopod studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Episodes of Carnegie's Diplopod are available from Carnegie's website, carnegieendowment.org, iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume podcasts. Follow us at Carnegie Diplopod. I'm Jen Psaki. Thanks for listening.